I just learned that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age, meaning, depending on lifestyle habits, someone can either accelerate or decelerate the aging process. But just where do you stack up? That's where True Diagnostic comes in. With their True Age test, you can discover your biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. I just completed my True Age test, and I'm super excited to see what it reveals about my health. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off their entire order at TrueDiagnostic.com by using the code Harris at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TrueDiagnostic.com. Just use the code HARRIS to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today. If you're like me, you want to keep your personal information safe. There are many VPN companies out there to help you do this, but I'm using NordVPN, especially with their online layer and double layer VPN options, as well as their dark web monitor, which scans the dark web to see if your information is compromised in places you wouldn't normally look. NordVPN aims to make the internet a better place for everyone. Free the internet from the online threats, censorship, and surveillance whilst giving users the ability to access content which isn't available in their region. The NordVPN threat protection feature protects you from viruses, malicious malware, and phishing sites. With one NordVPN subscription, you can use this service on up to 10 devices. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/matter, matter, which will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
John here with a quick thought on why we are divided today and whether or not there was ever a time we were united. And if we were, how did we lose that uniting principle? So I want to start at the beginning if I can, and I bring an assumption to this. My assumption is that the United States is, today at least, an empire composed of multiple nations. I don't think we were always this. But we always did have divisions, and this is where we start the story. If you read David Hackett Fisher's book, Albion Sea, this becomes very evident. There were multiple folkways at the beginning of the United States. So during the era of settlement, you had people going to different regions from different parts of England, and then also Scotland and Ireland. So essentially, Albion Sea, this is a British or an Anglo-Protestant project, the United States. And you had Cavaliers who were Anglican settling in Virginia. You had Scotch-Irish who were Presbyterian going to Appalachia. You had people who were Puritans going to Massachusetts and New England, which later became Congregationalists, which later became Unitarian. You have those on the frontier regions becoming Baptist and Methodist over time. You have in the mid-Atlantic colonies a smorgasbord of Catholics and Quakers and even German Lutherans settling there. But the majority of people were some form of Anglo-Protestant. And you can see this in those who signed the Declaration of Independence. Only one, and I believe that was Charles Carroll of Delaware, if I'm not mistaken, was a Roman Catholic. All of them had Anglo ancestry of some kind. Now, there was a uniting principle at the beginning, if you want to call it the beginning. I mean, people had been here for well over a century. But when you have the Revolutionary War or the War for Independence, 13 separate colonies, soon to become states, unite as Englishmen to fight for their English rights against the king and the Parliament of England. And so they secede and separate from England and form their own thing. Now, this is a loose confederation at first, and it remains a loose confederation, a federal arrangement, even under the Constitution. George Washington, in his farewell address, when he's leaving the public stage, he kind of talks like a parent to younger children who are siblings. Not in a diminishing or a condescending way, but in a nurturing kind of way. And he tells them, one of the things he tells them is to make sure that they stay out of foreign entanglement. So cultivate their own kind of in-group preference and identity. And he emphasizes the fact that they have a shared heritage, a shared religion, shared manners and customs. And they did, but they also had many differences. And it does strike you when you read this as if it were a parent saying, "You're siblings," even though there's differences. So these differences obviously emerge later during the war between the states, or the American Civil War, depending on the term you use. But before we get to that point, there are ebbs and flows in the unity that Americans feel for one another, the affinity, the togetherness. You have under James Monroe's presidency an era of good feelings after the War of 1812, because during that war, there was a lot of separation. In fact, New England was the main one who kept threatening to secede from the United States, most prominently at the Hartford Convention. They did not see a good deal for themselves and especially their economy. They relied on seafaring trades, and the Jefferson presidency was pretty adverse to that, but so were some of the presidents who came after that. And this is, there was an agrarian versus commercial interest kind of thing going on. And it wasn't just economic, it was social. But there were certainly economic fractures that I think were on, you saw them more prominently on the veneer of these social fractures. Well, pretty soon after the era of good feelings, you have a tariff controversy. And the tariff controversy is, again, agrarian versus commercial interests. The state of South Carolina most prominently threatens to nullify federal law. There's the Force Bill, and then there is a reconciliation of sorts. And this tenuous relationship remains for a number of years until the Civil War. And of course, the issue of whether or not those in the South who were in the prominent classes who owned slaves could go into the Western territories with their slaves becomes a big cause for dissension, namely because Southerners viewed this as unconstitutional to prohibit their slaves from entering these territories, and it was about influence in those territories. It wasn't really even about the enumeration of slaves. As you see under the Confederate Constitution, they outlaw the international slave trade. It was more about whether or not Southern elites are going to have influence and carry their understanding and their vision for the economy and social arrangements into the states that will eventually decide who controls the United States. So the South secedes from the Union, and it's really the lower South, because the upper South stays in the Union until Lincoln calls for troops. And then they say, we don't want to be in this arrangement because it's a federal arrangement. And the basic understanding of a federal arrangement is you can leave. In fact, three of the ratification agreements that states made with the federal government explicitly say this. This was an understanding even before that, going back to the Revolutionary War and the treaty that England signed with separate states, 13 of them, not just one conglomeration. Anyway, after that big division, there is steadily a forced unification, but steadily an actual unification begins to happen. And this takes decades. In fact, when I myself was a child, I remember members of the Greatest Generation and hearing them talk, and even members of the Greatest Generation still had a sense of, I don't know if disdain is too strong a word, but there was a dislike for Yankees. One of my great uncles would say he wouldn't even visit me when I lived in upstate New York because there were Yankees up there. And so this, and you can understand if you study Reconstruction, if you study even what happened in the war when Sherman marched through and burned whole cities down, burned churches, burned everything, really. I mean, there's a lot of disdain for what happened during those times. Some estimates say about 1 million slaves themselves starved and died after the war. And so this was the worst kind of arrangement to be freed into. And the bonds that existed between master and slave were severed between the elites of the local region, and then they were reattached to an impersonal government in D.C. And those I would argue chords are still present. And they're still, so it's more like trading masters than it is actually ending subordinate position. And so this is sort of a side story in the whole grand narrative, but you have the descendants of slaves who are, who function, many of them at least, in this political capacity as pawns of whoever the ruling class is and whatever they promise them. And right now it's the Democrat Party. So this is also going on, and the Soviets later on in the 20th century, but even the Japanese actually get on, in on this, but our enemies see this as a weak point to use to exploit the United States. But let's go back to the Reconstruction era. Eventually, during and after Reconstruction, really after Reconstruction, you have the what are called the Redeemer governments arise in the South. And you have a sense that we've got our land back among the local populations who used to control things. And you have these reunions among Civil War veterans where the Union and the formerly Confederate soldiers get together and say, you know, you're an American, I'm an American, Robert E. Lee's a hero, and so is Abraham Lincoln. And we've lived under that regime up until probably my teenage years. When I was a kid, that was still in place. Robert E. Lee was a good guy, and so is Abraham Lincoln. And we North and South unite. And I mean, you see this carried on through World War I and World War II. Southerners prove their allegiance. They are welcomed back as Americans in the fullest sense of the word. You even have in the 1970s, Robert E. Lee, Jefferson Davis are pardoned post their death. And you know, by the Democrats, nonetheless. I believe it was Jimmy Carter who pardoned Jefferson Davis. This is something that is really, you know, there's still a regional distinction, but there's really this sense of we are Americans. We're all Americans again. And we have a common enemy, and that was the USSR. But obviously, World War I, World War II, these are efforts that all Americans get in on. They need to be behind the war effort. Now, there were your people who didn't want to be involved in these efforts, but by and large, especially in World War II, people get behind the war effort. These are times in which people unite as well. And this is also coming off of the settlement of these Western states. So Manifest Destiny also gives this shared purpose for Americans of different regions, and they go out west, and in going out west, conquering the frontier, they have a shared destiny and a shared purpose. And this is what allows large amounts of immigration into Ellis Island and other places to really, you know, to give them land that where they can call their own. You have Germans in the Midwest. You have these different regions that have their unique peculiarities, but it's kind of like kids that are separated from one another. They're not going to fight, and they can kind of work together. And that's what you have in the United States. The scale of the country gives it a sense of federal and loose kind of affiliation, but a sense of unity and purpose at the same time. Now, this is where we're at now. The Cold War era, which I think ended actually after the War on Terror, so it was on life support, and then George Bush kind of breathed new life into it. After 9/11, there was a new sense of Americans together against a common enemy, and that extended for a period of time until Obama. I think Obama's presidency is the cutoff point for that Lincolnian America, that America that is together as one, but it's such a loose, watered-down oneness that what does it really mean? These regions of the United States are so different. You have metropolitan identities, regional identities, state identities, and different kinds of nations now, post-1965 Immigration Act, settling in different areas. If you go to Dearborn, Michigan, it's Muslim, and the default settings are Muslim, and different areas are like this. If you go to Los Angeles, when I was a kid, it wasn't like this as much. Now, it's completely Hispanic. As far even people speaking Spanish in many places as their primary language. I mean, this is not uncommon in many regions of the Southwest, and so you have a separation happening. And this loose kind of Lincolnian Cold War era and Cold War era unity isn't enough to keep people together. Because much of it was based on the fact during the Cold War that we weren't the Soviets. So we believed in God. We believed in freedom. We believed in the American dream. We believed you could make anything of yourself if you wanted to make something of yourself. And there's groups in America that feel like they're left behind, that they haven't been able to make of themselves what they want to make of themselves. So you already have that fracture. And the BLM movement really exposed that fracture happening, that they were promised that these disparities would be eliminated. That was the civil rights movement, but they're not. And of course, that wedge has been driven home by our enemies for years. And then you have the fact that, and this is the Christian nationalism thing, you have the fact that there are regions, and especially in the Northeast and the Pacific Northwest, that don't want Christianity at all anymore. They want to return to some kind of paganism. And the Bible Belt isn't like that at all, completely out of step. So you have a major division over religion. Christian nationalists, I think, are trying to find a unifying principle in the fact that most Americans still value Christianity, even if they're not Christians, and they claim to be. So maybe a loose kind of Christianity, a cultural Christianity, can be a uniting principle of some kind. And if we can get authentic, real Christians in positions of authority, that would be great. But there's other uniting principles in competition with this, or maybe complementary to it. Of course, Trump wants to unify the country along the lines of success. As long as you're successful, that'll unite the country, right? It's about the money you have and the ability to spend and enjoy things. And of course, this does help some people to have a good economy, but this isn't going to be the uniting thing because it's not ultimately a squabble over the economy, even though the economy does represent a squabble. You also have people who want to unite the country over liberal values. And I feel probably the most sorry for them in a sense, but I also don't feel sorry because this was just a stepping stone. It was a halfway measure. It was a transitional period to try to use liberalism and this idea that we're for some kind of notion of equality, some kind of notion of freedom, but it's very vague. And the civil rights regime, I think, definitely shows what this is most clearly. But this was never going to be a uniting principle. This was never really that rooted. If anything, this was a watered down kind of post-Christian ideology that in some ways doesn't even suit our country anymore because people aren't self-governing. Many people in many regions, if you're in Chicago, you need people to have their decisions limited because they're making bad decisions, right? If you're out in a country area, it's fine if people make their own decisions because they still have a sense of community and shared responsibility, and they want to help their fellow man and so forth. So that's part of the fracture in our country too. Some of the aspects of liberalism still can exist where you have a stable, healthy society where they're already making decisions that benefit the greater society. But in areas where you don't have that, it doesn't work at all. Liberalism is not a uniting principle. And that's one of the reasons I wrote my book, Against the Waves, Christian Order in a Liberal Age, to provide a way forward. So this is why we are in the state we're in now. When Obama became president, he was interested, I think, in accelerating some of these fractures. But we were also already on life support in the war on terror. And it really did, the enthusiasm for that ended under Obama's presidency. And there was no uniting principle left. And so you have now Americans who are completely divided and they don't even trust each other. The one half of the country or the people living in the country do not trust the other half of the people living in the country to actually even care about the country. And it really has come down to whether or not you even love the country. Trump comes in. Trump represents the old order. Trump represents a united base of those who are Cold War era, FDR Democrats, Lyndon Baines Johnson Democrats, even who just love the country, along with paleoconservatives and libertarians. And it's a big coalition, but all these people really do want, they love the land they live in. They want to honor its history. And they believe that there have been sacrifices made by various groups, but most notably the settlers who first came here, that should be honored and should not be extended to the whole world. So they're against globalism. The question is that a coalition that is united enough to keep things going after the baby boomer generation dies? And I have my doubts about that. I think moving forward, this is my prediction, you are going to see more and more especially through the use of the internet. This is, will be facilitated. People moving to various regions and affiliating with people who share their political beliefs and religious beliefs and cultural beliefs. There will be a separation, and this is going to happen whether you want it to happen or not. It's just a fact of life. This is how people behave. It's going to happen organically. It's going to happen when you look at your children and you think, what kind of life am I giving them in this liberal city? I could go somewhere else. So that's going to start happening, especially as Trump leaves the stage. I think we're in a temporary position right now of feeling that things are very united, that I don't really have to move because Trump's got it under control. Maybe Vance gets in the next time. Maybe this extends for another 8 years or 12 years. Who knows? But eventually, I think the cracks are going to form again. They're going to be revealed. I don't want to be a pessimist here. I'm actually an optimist. But I think there's a couple possibilities, and this is what I think is going to probably happen. There are going to be many elites, you already see this happening, who start to realize Christianity was a uniting principle, and we've lost it. And some of them will have liberal values, but they realize they can't ground them. And many of them will become Christians. The ones who do not become Christians, who are interested in Christianity, will at least respect it on in a social capacity. And they will see it as necessary for the preservation of the culture they love. You are going to see the fractures over religion, I think, become even greater over time. And I don't know which direction that exactly is going to go in, but I do think that, that God could do a work here. He's already doing a work in people reading the Bible and people becoming saved and people affiliating with Christianity. And no Christian institution, no denomination can take credit for it. Tim Allen's just reading the Bible. Tucker Carlson's just reading the Bible. Joe Rogan and Elon Musk are talking about the importance of Christianity, even though they're not Christians. They're not getting this from the Southern Baptist Convention, right? Naila Ray isn't saved because someone from the PCA came and told her about Jesus. I mean, this stuff is happening. It seems like God is directing this in a very direct way. So we'll see what the providence of God has, but that could be the thing. That could be a uniting principle that forms that will at least help provide some solidarity. But even with that, you're still going to have a regionalism forming. It's inescapable. You're going to have people who, because it's more than just religion. It's also a whole way of life that people unite around. It's also ancestry and living in a place. And I mean, it's all the things that make up and confer identity. So people are going to, I think, start forming more local attachments and more attachments to people facilitated through the internet with various political guilds and thinking and communities that kind of form online and have a mirror in localized communities as well. I think that's what you're looking at moving forward. And the best way to, I think, try to maintain peace and also preserve our way of life through common defense and shared trade agreements, etc., is to try to get back to a federal arrangement. Now, I don't know exactly how this happens because centralization is what we seem to be going towards. And people want a king. And when there's times of mass chaos, people are going to want a king more to just come in and restore order. So can we get back to a federal arrangement? I don't know. That's what I want to see happen. I think that's probably the best way forward given the circumstances we're in. But you may have another possibility is someone like a Caesar, a Caesarian figure rising to the public stage who says, I'll restore order, and then order is forced. In the cities where they don't want, let's say if it's a right-wing kind of Christian authoritarian figure, the cities who don't want that, the regions who don't want that, too bad, you're getting that, right? And so that's another possibility. Now, is that good? I mean, it may be better than the alternative. The alternative could just be chaos. The alternative could be being taken over by another country. The alternative could be some kind of a pagan nationalism that unites people in vice or something. I mean, who knows, right? The future is very much uncertain from our limited human perspectives. But this is why the United States is not united and why it can't be united unless we find a uniting principle once again. George Washington tried to reinforce a uniting principle in the early stages of the American Republic, and even then there were divisions. How much more so now, after all the immigration that we've had? So With that, I'll just cap it by saying there were points in American history where there were uniting principles, generally with common enemies, or with a shared vision of and purpose in settling frontiers, which I think Trump is trying to tap into again with Mars and Greenland, etc. Or with just the fact that we have the same heritage or a similar heritage. We come from a similar place, Albion seed, and we have similar religious and moral and social values and ways of living. With those things eroding, you're not going to have unity anymore. And the enemy now is domestic for most people. Most conservatives that I talk to now mistrust their own deep state government more than they do China. The common enemy is no longer there. There's not a shared enemy. It's not like the Soviet Union. So all of these things have been eliminated over time. And so it's no wonder that there is a lot of disunity. All right. Well, I hope that helps explain things for you. God bless. Bye.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.